on RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
What about the decision of Jess Eaton to pack up Victoria, head over to South Australia and just have a bit of a crack for a few more opportunities? 6 months later, she is now leading the South Australian Jockeys Premiership.
Just on the All-Star Mile with horses like the Harrovian, I think the last tinkering that needs to be done is to balance the weights out a bit better. I just think the fairy tale lasts all the way up to the race and then they can't win.
Jamie Carr extended her lead at the top of the Premiership. Her strike rate is almost twice as strong a strike rate as what the other major jockeys have.
So if the Queensland trainers are unhappy with their lifestyle and their workload, then what does it say about the furnaces of Melbourne and Sydney? Because they have to be worse.
And every time a nice price horse goes through the ring, you're constantly reminded that you can come back and race in all these million-dollar races the following year and for every year after. Best marketing tool in Australian yearly market.
It is that time of the week, The Verdict, where we look back on the weekend's racing and look ahead to tomorrow to try and find you a winner, discuss all of the action. It's been a big weekend, not just here in Australia, with, of course, we kicked it off on Friday night, Sandown on Saturday, but all over the world. Hong Kong, New Zealand, plenty to discuss. Matty Stewart is here, as he is each and every Monday when he's not on holidays. Good to have you back, Matty. How are you?
Man's entitled to have a couple of weeks off. I'm well. We had our Mansfield Cup Barbie yesterday down at Tigers, so that was a swimming in the dam. And
were you drinking from the cup?
Not in a cup. No, given that would not be COVID safe, we resisted the urge to drink out of the cup. It may or may not have been thought about, but we had a lovely day yesterday, and obviously, the international stuff's been amazing. John Size, Jamie Richards, had two amazing trainers. For John Size to win one, Quinella another of the big three yesterday, and I still don't think 30-year-old Jamie Richards is quite getting the traction that what he's been achieving is entitled to. So I think they were the big stars of the weekend.
Phenomenal. We spoke to him on Saturday morning and they absolutely dominated the Karaka Millions meeting over there. Now, Mick Sharkey would normally join us, but he has given us the dice because he's out trying to catch fish. He's on a tuna vessel. So while Sharky's out catching fish, we've got our own big fish, and that is Mickey Lynch. If Mick Lynch was a fish, what would he be?
A kipper.
A kipper. How are you, Lynchy?
Well, I'm fine. At least I'm not a whale anymore. But why do you say that, Matt? Kipper? Is there a reason behind
it? I don't even know what a kipper is, only that I know that you Poms have it for breakfast sometimes.
We do. Well, a kipper is actually a smoked haddock, but there was a very successful jockey in England in the 70s, late 70s and early 80s, whose name was John Lynch, and in fact Kipper Lynch was his nickname, partly, I believe, because he walked with his feet splayed, so he looked like a haddock that had been cut in two and smoked.
You could have thrown any fish at Lynchy and he would have had an anecdote.
He would have had a fish story as Felgate's door slams. I love the Zoom connections.
They would have
Lynchy
been
looks like he's about to. Lynchy looks like he's about to belt out a tune on our links, on our Zoom connection.
If you're careful, I'll give you the Clash first album. Don't worry, it'll be all over in about 26 minutes.
Well, we should get some Rastafarian by the end of the verdict as well, which is my favourite accent that Lynchy does. Lynchy, over the weekend, what was your highlight?
Well, my highlight was probably just taking it easy, because aside from the international stuff, which I wasn't really that involved in, I thought it was a pretty kind of almost the most lacklustre weekend of racing in Australia for the entire year, wasn't it? Now, that's not a comment at all about the jockeys, owners, trainers, the horses that ran, because, you know, they make the show go on. But really, there wasn't a great deal of sort of star action, apart perhaps from the good two-year-old that won the opening race at Sandown, who's one to watch.
Lynchy was talking about the win of the two-year-old at Sandown in the first race, Artorias, and I think it was one of Dino's best of the day. It was absolutely smashed, and there is no doubt it was the highlight of the day. What would you do if you had this horse, gents? Because the quandary is, do they go to the Blue Diamond, try and take the big carrot, or he looks a horse at the further the better, 1,400, even 1,600 metres. And just to correct myself, I said that the third decks are due today. It's Thursday for the Blue Diamond, for those who are wanting to pay up. Which way would you go, Matt?
You'd probably just see how things flow along for a couple of weeks. There's the next round of Blue Diamond heats in a couple of weeks. We're going to see Jigsaw again, who knocked off Artorias at Geelong really impressively. We're going to see tomorrow as well. So I'd just get my powder dry. I wouldn't make any decision. I'd let the, you know, obviously with two-year-olds, they're going to tell you what they want to do, basically. So I'd just acknowledge that there are options and then wait till the death knock.
I think that's probably the most sensible way to look at it. But my feeling is, you know, so many of these early two-year-old races, they're 1,000 and 1,100. If you've got one that can already stay 1,300, why boil it and fry it in the high pressure of the diamonds and even slippers when, you know, if he looks as if he'll get 1,400, a mile even, there's Group 1 prize money there, there's Group 1 status, and you might not quite have the same kind of helter-skelter preparation and gives you a horse that can go on maybe over those sort of mile distances as a three-year-old. So my feeling, if I was to own him, might well be to exercise a bit of caution, but it's very hard to turn down the bird in the hand, but if you can, I think there'd be a good future for this lad.
Well, so there might be another bird in the hand as well. The stable, I reckon it was 25 years ago with Flying Spur, where they went to the Size Produce and they still had the Golden Slipper later on. So there's still a big carrot if you don't go to the Blue Diamond. So I just think they tell you. I mean, it'll be up to the horse in a way.
Well, Freedman's will have a good line, I suppose, tomorrow, because Frost Flowers goes around in the Phillies preview. She's currently the $9 second favourite, and you've got Dosh also, and gee, Graham Pick sounded confident before the break there. So the Phillies preview tomorrow is going to be fascinating, Lynchy, because we're going to actually get two of the top five or six in the market in action tomorrow.
Yeah, we certainly are, and you know, this is a kind of where the real season starts, isn't it, for the two-year-olds. It's almost like the, I wouldn't call them a repechage before Christmas, but you know, you get those kind of early types that are up and running, and then the ones that have taken a little bit more time to come to hand. Dosh certainly was good in her win, but obviously did a lot wrong that day, didn't she? And needs to show better manners on the track. Frost Flowers, I was talking to the Freedman Stable on Friday night, actually. You know, after they had a winner at the Valley in the first race, the staying race. Brad Taylor was talking about Frost Flowers and the 2-year-old Midwest who goes in the Colts division, and I think they're reasonably optimistic, you know. And Frost Flowers has made a big impression as well, the daughter of Frosted, who won at Flemington first up on New Year's Day. So we're going to learn, as you say, and as Matt earlier said, we learn stuff, we see them, but they kind of, you've got them until you've got them. They can look unbeatable until the morning of the Blue Diamond, and then they can be over the top or gone, can't they? How many times have we seen two-year-olds that look as if they're fantastic go down in these great races and a 50-1 or a 40-1 pop run in the frame? So,
even Robert Smurden had a hot favourite and then it imploded on the day, and even the Freedman Stable, it was either last year or the year before.
I Am Immortal. They had I Am Immortal as well, who looked good.
Yep. And there was the other one last season whose name just escapes me, who then went on to the Golden Slipper. So a lot can change between the preludes and the actual race. Interesting with Dosh, isn't it? I remember talking to Kenny Keyes when Rich Enough went to stud. He said, oh, I know I will say this. He said, but I'm going to have a lot of faith in these. They're cracking types. And for Graham Begg to have a daughter of Written Tycoon, and Written Tycoon was the sire of Written By, and you asked him this morning about, you know, whether this was up there with the best. And if he thinks that Dosh is up there with Written By, then you're going to take a really good two-year-old to knock off Dosh in the next couple of months.
I hope we get to see a spectacular performance tomorrow because it will build the anticipation, because we've got Enthar, obviously. Yep. Mick Price has said he's going to take Profiteer to the English Millennium, which, as you would, it's a $2 million race, and then try and get Profiteer back here for a Blue Diamond. So to build the excitement and the anticipation, because everyone is speaking about Enthar as the world beater from what we've seen in that debut performance, you want to see some really good challenges lay down the gauntlet.
I reckon now we know almost nothing, but in 3 weeks' time we'll know a hell of a lot more. So I think it starts now. I think it started on Saturday with the big Freedman winner. We've seen a few like Jigsaw and Enthar, but we need to see them again. So I treat it as a blank page now, and I see it filling in the next few weeks.
Well, that, and Animo as well. That Merson Cooper form, I think, is going to be one that we need to follow from the spring as well. Lynchy, you talk about it was a bit of a ho-hum weekend. Does that, outside of the previews, continue tomorrow at Caulfield? Thin fields, small fields again, especially the Sir John Dillon Stakes as well. So it is a long spring carnival with autumn carnival, these horses. It is stretched right out. And at the moment, we are in summer, but it's just a slow drip, isn't it?
Summer used to be big fields. We used to have big Standishes and big, you know, Boxing Day races and things like that. And Lynchy, I did something yesterday on... It seems so quirky to me that we have a dearth of sprinters where we have a never-ending assembly line of producing them. We have the Magic Millions.
I saw that headline, where have all the sprinters gone?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we make thousands of them every year. We sold 1,200 yearlings at the Gold Coast, and most of them were sprint bred. There was like 50 I'm Invincibles, 50 Snitzels, and all these sorts of things. What happens to these? This oil well full of precocious types that are not translating into horses that consistently flesh out the older class sprint ranks, whether we prep them up too heavy for the sales and they don't go on as racehorses, or whether they're too precocious and push too hard early. Michael, it seems unusual to me that we can ever have a lack of depth in our sprinters.
It's an interesting question, although, you know, if you went to some jurisdictions around the world and you said, right, the feature 1,400-metre race has got 8 runners, the feature 1,000-metre sprint has got 10, the two-year-old races, you know, have got double
figure. I suppose it's a quality, though, Lynchy.
Well, you know, the quality, what have we got? The Adam Stakes has got Prezzardo top-rated 101. It's a listed handicap. We're not talking about even a Group 3 race there. So you've got a 101-rated horse, and then Bonzaway is 99, who's second top-weighted. So that's not terrible quality, really, is it, for a listed handicap race? The John Dillon is a listed quality handicap. You could probably say with a top weight rated at 97, that's maybe, you know, could do with a little bit more oomph at the top there. But in terms of quality and competitiveness, I think if you've got double figure fields, 8 runners plus, you've got each way betting, and as long as you haven't got too many of them running out of the handicap, that to me is the biggest bugbear, where you know, you've got the rating stretch and you've got horses maybe in a race who are carrying a minimum weight, but in ratings terms they should be carrying, you know, kilos less. That's a bigger problem for me than, say, a tight 8 or 9 runner field where everything's in the handicap and everything's got a chance.
Dean Lester's just texted in. He makes a very valid point. He said there's 6 city meetings in 10 days between January 20 and 30, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, very valid point.
So it's the programming, you would imagine, that maybe needs to be looked at. But then it's the old age question, isn't it? It's the chicken or the egg, because it's the metro meetings that end up having better turnover, which feeds the beast.
Well, maybe we race so often that the numbers are spread out, and there's a partial explanation there. But even the Carrington Stakes in Sydney on Saturday was a terrible field, and it was terrible prize money, and it seems terribly placed on the calendar. And it's been shifted around in distance and location that many times, the Carrington Stakes. I remember At Sea used to win it a lot. And it was always a bit of a little feature race leading into the summer autumn. So maybe trainers are planning for their horses different to what the calendar provides. Maybe they're waiting longer with two-year-olds, but maybe the calendar hasn't changed in accordance with that. So maybe there's a myriad of reasons. But
that's possibly the case. Also, you know, we've got these new, well, we can't call them pop-up races anymore because they've been around for 2 or 3 seasons now, but we've got new events that are kind of focusing people's minds, changing the preparation of horses, giving them newer targets, you know, Everest's in the spring, All-Star Miles in the autumn, and other type races that perhaps, you know, that's also diminishing the pool of horses that are available at this time of the year.
A couple of SMSs are coming through. Tony says, we've got too many sprinters 1 week, then not enough the next week. We've got too much racing. We can't have group standard racing every week. That's from Tony. There's another SMS coming through saying, well, what about over in New Zealand? The same thing's happening. Have you had a look at the Thorndon Mile, which used to be one of the age-old traditional races and high-standard races in New Zealand as well? So I suppose all racing jurisdictions are probably grappling with this. After these city meetings, we'll no doubt hear all the city track goers whinge about the weekend that the city meetings go to Bendigo, Ballarat or Sandown. It's hard to keep everyone happy, but you'd like to see a bit more depth at the moment.
Maybe there's a bit of a knock on racing through summer. Maybe the message in New Zealand here is if you're going to race in spring and autumn, something has to give, and maybe what was traditionally that strong period through summer, maybe that's the bit that's... Maybe we race too often and the numbers get thread too spin for that time of year. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just a natural kind of function of the way the calendar is operating. As Michael Felgate said, the programme book is maybe what needs to be looked at. Historically and traditionally, this worked, and it's probably worked until about the last decade. But things are changing, aren't they? In every facet of life, things are changing. In every aspect of other sports, things are changing, and markets change, consumer interest change, so maybe racing has to re-look at its summer programming.
I tell you what the highlight of the weekend was, that Karaka meeting in New Zealand, the amount of performances. Levante, have a listen to this win in the Westbury Classic.
Here's Levante down the outside. It's our Alley Cat, but hang on. Here comes Levante with 100 metres to go from last on the corner. She's bound into the lead. Oh, she's back in winning form today. Levante, brilliant. Second at the line was Alley Cat, and boy, that was a nice...
She's quickly becoming a cult figure in New Zealand with the way she wins her races, getting back out of her ground almost last, and... That performance, she was $1.40 on the weekend, but she was stone motherless coming to the turn. And you were, I was even thinking, I don't know if she can get there, but she, three bounds and she had them absolutely rounded up.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. The only question mark on all of this that's going on in New Zealand at the moment is their summer carnival is not for their established best horses, as we discussed a few weeks ago. The Melody Bells and Probabiles and Tiakau Sharks previously, he launched himself in the summer, but then he outgrew it. So the question is whether it parlays into... whether they can, how do they fit into the Australian carnival landscape when they come over here? I think Melody Bell's a four lengths better horse, in inverted commas, in New Zealand because the competition's weaker than here. So I don't know. I think they all looked impressive, and the Jamie Richards juggernaut is another thing as well that does parlay over to here. He does tend to win a lot of races here as well. But the big question mark for me on the summer of New Zealand is whether it's a launching pad or just how strong the form is.
Well, Aegon, hopefully we'll get to see come over here. Although, speaking to Andrew Forsman this morning, Sydney is a genuine option. I would have thought they would have definitely come here for the guineas and the $5 million of the All-Star Mile. And on the bubbles, we'll talk about that in a moment because I want to get your thoughts, Lynchy, as well. But they are getting ready for the next at Warragul. We'll take you back to Paul Hammond, and then we'll also have a chat after the break to Mick Geeran to get his thoughts on the strength of these Kiwi stars and the sales.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
At the 250, it's the Tangerine Army in the first five places here. The pacemaker now is on the bubbles. On the bubbles in front from Sophisticado, Sneaky Shark and Arvanello. It's on the bubbles and comes in place. They'll be on the bubbles all night long. On the bubbles won the Karaka Million. Second over will be Sneaky Shark.
What a great name for a good racehorse, On the Bubbles. That's what BM and the crew at the Emerald were doing on Saturday. Part owners in On the Bubbles, and no doubt the Tiakau fans were as well. The first four home in the Millions, making it 5 years in a row that Tiakau have claimed the Millions. And if you were listening to Mick Geeran last Thursday when he was on, he gave us a red-hot push saying that Jamie Richards was tipping On the Bubbles as his leading contender. It was $5 at that stage, and Mick Geeran joins us this morning. Busy at the sales after a huge Saturday night racing. Good morning, Mick. How are you?
Mate, I'm really well, thank you, Michael. Big hi to you and the boys and then all your listeners around Victoria. Yeah, it was actually nice to get that information from Jamie, so it wasn't my information. I wasn't like I was some smarty, but Jamie, good enough to tell us On the Bubbles was the go. And we had the other two horse race of the day, Emeralina versus Aegon. And Aegon went like a proper horse. It was $3 available for him, so it was $15 the all up. And I'm pretty sure Aegon's a horse you're going to see coming for the Australian guineas. If things go well there, then obviously he comes into All-Star Mile wild card invitation territory, but of course that's a long way to go just yet.
I actually had a quick chat to Andrew Forsman this morning, and he did say that Sydney is still in consideration, but I would have thought Melbourne would have been favourite. Do you honestly think that there's a chance they could go to Sydney instead of Melbourne with Aegon?
Well, he's a gelding, so obviously they can go to a derby preparation and doesn't matter, because obviously they don't typically like to win derbies with stallions. But yeah, the Guineas isn't as important to them as it would be if he was still a boy, for obvious reasons, because it would be a $20 or $25 million type race for him potentially. So he does like Sydney, Andrew. It gives them more chance of maybe getting some sting in the track, which they've had a lot of success with in Sydney at both Derby and Oaks level. I think they'll probably lean towards Melbourne, but as we all know, the Australian Guineas can become a very hot race, although last year, by the time we got there, there were only two or three winning chances. So Andrew's pretty smart. He's had a lot of success in both places. This is very much his horse rather than Murray Baker's horse, because Andrew found the horse at the sales. The people who own the horse, the Zames, who owned Jon Snow, are his clients. And it's maybe a little push towards the future for Andrew. One day Murray will probably retire and Andrew will need to have his own, you know, own flag up the flagpole. And I think Aegon's maybe the horse who might be able to take him there.
Mick, we're going to back Forsman and Baker in because they've done it so often before, but I think Catalyst left us a bit field shy of, you know, the best from New Zealand that could come over for a race like that, and then the Jamie Richards show, whether it moves onto a Golden Slipper or something like that. What do we take out of the entire meeting as a look ahead? Is Aegon good enough to win an Australian Guineas, and what about the Richards babies as well? Are they good enough to hop across the ditch and be competitive?
No, I was never ever going to tip a New Zealand horse to win a slipper. I mean, obviously McGinty could have won a slipper and probably would have won the slipper, but after that, we just don't have slipper horses outside our maze gate. It just doesn't happen to us. And I don't see this bunch being the horses who are going to do it without knowing the slipper depth, obviously. And the Guineas is slightly different. I mean, there's so many hyped three-year-olds in Australia because your stallion market's so hot. Every horse who's got balls who wins a race is a stallion potential, so everybody has to talk them up because everybody's on the money trail. I'm not sure they end up being that good. Like, yes, Catalyst failed last year, and Team Tiakau took one of their good horses there a few years ago and it failed, but often the Guineas can come up quite light. Like, when you think about last year, it actually wasn't that great a field, and the form subsequent out of the Guineas hasn't proven to be much good at all. So I think we don't have the hype on the New Zealand horses. I think our best three-year-olds can run with the horses over there, but I do think Sydney suits them better for a couple of reasons, and the results would show that. Sting in the tracks is a big help. A lot of the Australian horses are exhausted by the time they get to Sydney, and the fall-off rate's enormous. But obviously, our sweet spot's between 1,600 but up to 2,400 metres, and that's where our horses are really excelled, and they've done it for a long time. So I would much rather be backing horses in Sydney than backing New Zealand horses in Melbourne, because that Melbourne autumn carnival, calling it autumn, late February into March, outside Turn Me Loose and the Futurity a couple of years ago, we haven't had a lot of winners there for a very long time.
Mick, it's Michael Lynch here, another Michael from the Age and Sydney Morning Herald. How are you?
I know where you're from, Michael. I see your stuff online all the time.
Okay, that's good. Alleluia for your trenchant views and calling it like it is. I think you're absolutely right. The hype around so many horses in this country presumably isn't quite the same in New Zealand. 2 and 3 year old colts, it does just get absurd in my view quite often how they get spruced up and talked up, and as you say, very often they're only racing against their own age group, 2 year olds and 3 year olds for the bulk of the time, so we don't really know how good they are, do we? So I think your views on Aegon are very realistic there. It'd be great though if we could see him here in Melbourne, but it just in general terms, we've seen the good Kiwis. They can really compete at the high level when they come here. Melody Bell's won a Group 1 in the last few years. Turn Me Loose, as you say, was very good in recent years. But just generally, you know, how far is the general class gulf, do you think, between Australia and New Zealand? Or are we kidding ourselves here thinking we're better than you lot?
I think it depends on a couple of things, Michael. First of all, distance. We really struggle below 1,100 or below 1,400 metres. Now, Bostonian was good enough to win a Kingsford Smith Cup. You want to do the 10,000 at the Canterbury Stakes, but he's an outlier. We don't have many horses who can compete at that sprint level, and there's so much money and hype in sprints in Australia. That changes very quickly once you go 1 metre past 1600. Once you get 1 metre past 1600, things start to change, because you get towards 2000, and there's a lot of trainers in Australia who can't train those horses. They're too impatient, and I understand why they're too impatient, because they're trying to play into the stallion market. Let's not forget, a couple of years ago at the English Sale in Sydney, they sold 17 $1 million colts in 2 days. Well, when you buy those horses, you're not buying them to try and win a race. You're trying to buy a stallion, a lottery ticket. And therefore, the entire market plays towards that lottery ticket, which is why we have the sadness of seeing a horse like Bjorten Spunt retired. So what you're doing is you're not giving your best horses the best chance to beat it, whereas the Kiwis do, because ours aren't worth as much. Talking about the class of the horses, the problem we've got is stallions. We don't have enough good stallions in New Zealand. We have some, but we don't have enough, because these days, if you had a really good stallion, we were able to get Super Seth out of Australia. We paid, I think, $15 million for him.
Mick, just hold that thought.
On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
What about the decision of Jess Eaton to pack up Victoria, head over to South Australia and just have a bit of a crack for a few more opportunities? 6 months later, she is now leading the South Australian Jockeys Premiership.
Just on the All-Star Mile with horses like the Harrovian, I think the last tinkering that needs to be done is to balance the weights out a bit better. I just think the fairy tale lasts all the way up to the race and then they can't win.
Jamie Carr extended her lead at the top of the Premiership. Her strike rate is almost twice as strong a strike rate as what the other major jockeys have.
So if the Queensland trainers are unhappy with their lifestyle and their workload, then what does it say about the furnaces of Melbourne and Sydney? Because they have to be worse.
Every time a nice price horse goes through the ring, you're constantly reminded that you can come back and race in all these million-dollar races the following year and for every year after. Best marketing tool in Australian yearly market.
It is that time of the week, The Verdict, where we look back on the weekend's racing and look ahead to tomorrow to try and find you a winner, discuss all of the action. And it's been a big weekend, not just here in Australia, with, of course, we kicked it off on Friday night, Sandown on Saturday, but all over the world. Hong Kong, New Zealand, plenty to discuss. Matty Stewart is here, as he is each and every Monday when he's not on holidays. Good to have you back, Matty. How are you?
Man's entitled to have a couple of weeks off. Yeah, I'm well. We had our Mansfield Cup Barbie yesterday down at Tigers, so that was a swimming in the dam. And
were you drinking from the cup?
Not in a cup. No, given that would not be COVID safe, we resisted the urge to drink out of the cup. It may or may not have been thought about, but no, we had a lovely day yesterday, and obviously, gee, the international stuff's been amazing. The John Size, Jamie Richards, had two amazing trainers. For John Size to win one, Quinella another of the big three yesterday, and I still don't think 30-year-old Jamie Richards is quite getting the traction that what he's been achieving is entitled to. So I think they were the big stars of the weekend.
Phenomenal. We spoke to him on Saturday morning, and they absolutely dominated the Karaka Millions meeting over there. Now, Mick Sharkey would normally join us, but he has given us the dice because he's out trying to catch fish. He's on a tuna vessel. So while Sharky's out catching fish, we've got our own big fish, and that is Mickey Lynch. If Mick Lynch was a fish, what would he be?
A kipper.
A kipper. How are you, Lynchy?
Well, I'm fine. At least I'm not a whale anymore. But why do you say that, Matt? Kipper? Is there a reason behind that?
I don't even know what a kipper is, only that I know that you Poms have it for breakfast sometimes.
We do. Well, a kipper is actually a smoked haddock, but there was a very successful jockey in England in the 70s, late 70s and early 80s, whose name was John Lynch, and in fact Kipper Lynch was his nickname, partly, I believe, because he walked with his feet splayed, so he looked like a haddock that had been cut in two and smoked.
You so could have you thrown go. Any fish at Lynchy and he would have had an anecdote.
He would have had a fish story as Felgate's door slams. Well, I love the Zoom connections.
They would have
Lynchy
been
looks like he's about to. Lynchy looks like he's about to belt out a tune on our links, on our Zoom connection.
If you're not careful, I'll give you the Clash first album. Don't worry, right, it'll be all over in about 26 minutes.
Well, we should get some Rastafarian by the end of the verdict as well, which is my favourite accent that Lynchy does. Lynchy, over the weekend, what was your highlight?
Well, my highlight was probably just taken it easy, because aside from the international stuff, which I wasn't really that involved in, I thought it was a pretty kind of almost the most lackluster weekend of racing in Australia for the entire year, wasn't it? Now, that's not a comment at all about the jockeys, owners, trainers, the horses that ran, because, you know, they make the show go on. But really, there wasn't a great deal of sort of star action, apart perhaps from the good two-year-old that won the opening race at Sandown, who's one to watch.
It'll be given back before midday, don't worry. The other obvious highlight, and of course Johnny Size, he won the other Group 1 with Hot King Prawn over there, but the Golden 60 performance, 12 in a row, and I think it was at 14 and 15 now, Mick. So I know Matt spoke a lot about Beauty Generation being the bubble boy over there. And what's the opposition that Golden 60 is facing, Matt?
Sorry, well, he survived the international meeting, so, you know, he got through that. I know that guys like Hats Aitken had always had a fairly reserved view on how good he was, whether he was a blockbuster superstar or not, but I think he's just continuing to impress. And that win yesterday, for me, was almost as impressive as any of them, because the tempo of the race was against him. They got away from him in the straight, and he charged home, and he showed a bit of courage to get up and win. So I'm actually starting to respect Golden 60 more and more every time he goes around. So what's that, 13 for him, and I think Beauty Generation, or Silent Witness, is 17? Is that right?
Yeah.
So he's got a handful of wins to go.
Well, it's his 12th in a row.
Right. So I think he's got 17 is the one he has to chase. I think that might be Silent Witness.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, you know, and any horse that can win in adverse circumstances, saddle slipping, difficult tempo, you know, they're all plus points for him. But again, it's living and working in the bubble, isn't it? You know, and until they get they do get some good horses come to race against them, obviously in the big summer pre-Christmas international meetings. But I guess, you know, we like to see them travel. I mean, you know, horses from around the world do travel a lot more now, and it'd be great to see Golden 60 perhaps go and take on good milers in Europe, or even here, you know, in the autumn in Melbourne or Sydney. Just on the Hong Kong situation, and you're asking Mick why it survived, or Matt, you were asking why it survived better than Singapore. I just feel there is, though, the big imponderable with Hong Kong, which we're seeing play out, obviously, in much bigger things than racing. But, you know, what's going to happen with the democracy movement, if there's any crackdown, even further crackdowns from Li Xiaoping, and the Chinese army ends up going in there really heavy-handed? All of these things are imponderables, but can't be ruled out, and I guess that's a big question mark. If you're making your life in Hong Kong racing, if you're putting all your investment into Hong Kong racing now, that has to be a bit of a shadow that's overhanging it.
An SMS just on that. Andrew, who lives in Sydney, said culturally, Singapore and Hong Kong, the two racing jurisdictions, are poles apart. Racing is ingrained in Hong Kong. You've got a race course in the middle of the island. You can't escape it. I've lived in both cities, and you wouldn't know there was racing in Singapore unless you were a diehard fan.
Yeah, but that's become more the case in recent times. And it did have a burst of prominence about 10, 15 years ago when Kranji was created, and they had international races, and they were comparing one against the other. But I know that the government over there has always had a very strong anti-gambling stance, and I think they don't support the racing industry in Singapore because they don't support the gambling industry. So,
hey, gents, we're almost out of time. I just want to touch on Hobart yesterday. This was one of their feature days, the Elwick Stakes, the 1,000 Guineas and the Summer Cup. A couple of nice horses. Turk Warrior won impressively the Elwick Stakes, and Scott Brutton's Healer, who is undefeated now, absolutely bolted in the 1,000 Guineas, and in the Summer Cup, at the other end of the spectrum, White Hawk, $152 it paid on the tote, defeating Mandela Effect.
Beautiful.
But the good news is that the club, and it's Launceston, Hobart, I should say, the club got through its first meeting back. which seemingly went okay.
And was impossible for us to get a head around a month ago, wasn't it? It just looked terrible with the photos of the clods that were being ripped up everywhere that had been identified on the morning of the Thousand Guineas. And I had a text exchange with Siggy Carr, who trained and rode the winner of the runner-up to Gila in the Guineas. And I'll just read it word for word. It's very encouraging. In my opinion, that's the best the track has been since it's been redone. There was none of that awful kickback. It played fair for horses, could lead and win and also make ground from behind down the centre of the track. Credit where credit's due, those who got the track to yesterday's condition deserve a big pat on the back. So whatever they did, however they did it, they've done it. And obviously it's important because we've got the two big, the Derby and the Cup.
The Derby and the Cup coming up. So that is great news. Well done to everyone down there in Hobart and Tasmania that's been able to help that. And I think obviously our guys heading down there as well, Liam O'Keefe and Marty Simon, have been obviously a big help, so they need a lot of kudos as well.
Just on that White Hawk, I thought the name was familiar. He did run here in the spring, actually. He had an outing at Caulfield, and he went off at an even longer price, Michael, $201 in a mile and a quarter race behind Saracen Knight and Irish Flame. Needless to say, he finished last of 15.
Lynchy remembers.
Oh, he's got a very obtuse mind. Hey, Lynchy.
Yeah.
A lot of SMSs saying, great to have Lynchy back.
Good
to have some common sense on the verdict panel. But what we want is a winner tomorrow at Caulfield. Have you got a winner for us? And maybe can you give it to us in your Rastafarian accent?
In my Rasta sound, you want me to look at the track rating tomorrow? I don't know really what the ground is going to be like, but I is saying the way I is
just
talking.
Just a winner.
I is talking now, you have to say never again, don't you? A race six in Caulfield. You don't want to be hearing this again.
Outstanding.
I'm on to do start in the same race first up. Always had a bit of a spruik from the Hawks camp. First up, clean slate.
What's your best accent?
I've got a. You don't know. I've got.
Well, give us one. Give us your tip in an accent. Mickey just was absolutely outstanding.
I don't do a bad one like Lynchy, do I? Do start in race. What is it?
You've got to look at that.
Race six, innit?
You've got to look at that, mate. You've got to give it some absolute unfair.
And there's a clash of the giants in one of the races at Balnarring tomorrow. The two Tiger Keenan superstars, Baby Cakes and Maldestro, go head-to-head in the sprint.
Well, you're Maldestro. So are you backing? Can we get on
No,
tomorrow?
I think Baby Cakes will knock him off tomorrow.
All right. Well, good luck tomorrow. Enjoy that. And we should have mentioned, too, Great Western yesterday. Patch Adams winning another cup.
What a legend.
For Aaron Purcell. I've got Aaron coming up. He's got a huge number of runners today at Warrnambool. So we'll have a chat to Aaron on the other side of this, and we'll find you all the winners at Warrnambool today with Warren Huntley as well. Lynchy, go well.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks. Great to be back, chaps, and good punting tomorrow.
Matty, tomorrow it's a Saturday format,
yes.
So we'll be on with Dan Malecki between 10 and 12. Don't forget Gareth Hall in the morning, the first word, and the form panel from 8 o'clock. Up next, we'll find you winners at the Bull.